we're going to be talking about Advent, which is, this is the first week of Advent, and it's kind of leading up to Christmas. And my kids are already bouncing off the walls for Christmas, and it feels a little bit early for us, but they came home this week, and they're like, can we put Christmas music on? And I was thinking, that's what, four weeks of nonstop Christmas music in the house? I don't know. But they're so excited, and you're like, oh, so much joy. So they're like, can we put the Christmas tree up? Can we put the Christmas tree up? I'm like, ooh, that's got to pass through supervision. I've got to ask the supervisor whether we can do that. But after some cleaning was done, it was passed, so our Christmas tree has gone up. Early days yet, but it's still kind of exciting. And so some thoughts about Christmas just leading up to it. There's always a sense of waiting and also excitement or anticipation. But I want to show you some things to kind of get you thinking about waiting a little bit. Have you guys seen this before? Okay, you will not believe what's on the other side of this pancake. Wait for it. Okay, so this showed up in my Facebook feed, and it never flips over, okay? So it just is there to drive you crazy. Because there's a sense of, please, just let it flip over already. Show me what's on the other side. Is it going to be a Pokemon? Is it going to be Elsa? What is it going to be? But it never flips over. And some people, I think, were really angry on Facebook about this and reported to Mark Zuckerberg, who's done nothing about it. But this is, so keep that in mind. That's the first thing. I think, just to put you out of your misery, sometimes when we're waiting for something good, it feels like it'll never come, right? You're just waiting and waiting and waiting. You worry that maybe it will never happen. Okay, so that's the first thing. The second video I'm going to show you, you might have also seen this before, too. This is Jimmy Kimmel. He's an American talk show host.
Last week, I issued a challenge. I asked the parents of America to pull a little holiday trick on their children. We did this on Halloween with candy and got a lot of response to it. So we did it again, this time for Christmas. I asked parents to tell their kids they were going to let them open one present a few weeks early. But instead of a good present, I said, put something the kids won't like in the box and then upload a video of that to YouTube labeled, Hey Jimmy Kimmel, I gave my kids a terrible present. And a lot of people did do this, and they did give their kids terrible presents, and a lot of the kids, surprisingly, reacted poorly to that.
What's
Charlie?
I don't like this.
What is it?
An old banana.
An old banana? Isn't that exciting? What are you doing?
Okay.
A battery and an onion.
What's wrong?
I don't want an onion.
Did you smell your onion? Here, smell it.
Marissa, what do you tell me all the time about my cooking?
I love it.
You love my cooking, so I made you something.
You should appreciate
her getting us a present, but I didn't know it would be like that.
So you don't want that peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
I'll eat it.
So that's, just so you know, biblically it says, fathers, do not exasperate your children. So I don't approve of doing this to your own children. But one of the things I do want to mention, I will turn the lights back on because I think this will put everyone to sleep, this kind of lighting. This is perfect, like, oh, I'm just going to get Daisy and fall asleep. There's two things about it, is waiting and expectation. And the longer you wait for something, I think it's like, I'm sure there's a mathematical model, the longer you wait for something, the less you feel like it's going to happen. And so for a lot of us, actually, in our life, we've been waiting for stuff for a long time. Maybe it's healing. Maybe it's a spouse. Maybe it's for your family to recognize you. Maybe it's for that job promotion. But we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. And the longer that doesn't happen, the less we believe it will. You start to doubt. You start to question. Not only that, you start to get a little bit bitter, a little bit angry about it. So that first one with that pancake that never flipped, the longer you watched it, the more you realized, oh, it's never going to flip. But what if it does? What if I was wrong? Maybe you just have to wait 3 days before it finally turns over. We don't believe. We start to doubt. We start to say, well, maybe that's not real. The second thing is expectations. Well, we expect something good. That's great, right? You're expecting something great. So those kids were all expecting a great Christmas present. They're like, I get to open a present early. I'm so excited. An onion? Why would you give your child an onion? There's another one where they gave him a potato. Another one kid got a light bulb. And like, what do I do with these things? There's a sense of real disappointment. And I think in our lives, a lot of times, we've expected great things. But when we get there, you realize it's not the same as what we hope for. We're disappointed in it. It didn't work out the way we want. You expect that when you get to university, you're going to make great friends. Then you get to university and find out, actually, you don't build those relationships. That's not what I hoped it was going to be like. Maybe you're expecting that you were going to get married to someone, and it didn't happen. You broke up. And it's really hard to say, you know, I don't know what the point is. Or maybe you're expecting that once I get this job, my life's going to be so much better, I'll have income. Then you get the job, and you're like, oh my goodness, this is not what I expected. The emotional, painful stress of it's much worse than I thought it was going to be. In our lives, we are always coming up into this thing, not just waiting expectation, but doubt and disappointment. And that's what is a real problem for when we have high expectations, the sense of disappointment. Like, it's not what we want it to be. The thing is, if you can really understand what's to come, if you really understand what it is that's coming, you can wait for it. If you know it's going to be good, you can wait for it. Our day and age, our culture today, we like things to happen straight away, really fast, as soon as possible. If you don't get instant feedback, it feels like something's not right. But actually, what's really important is actually learning how to say, well, if I wait for it, is it going to be good? Is really what's going to come going to be worth it? The second thing is what it's worth. So what's to come and what it's worth. Is what I'm waiting for worth the wait? Those are the two questions. And when we think about Advent, we think about Christmas, we're not thinking about presents. We're not thinking about the Christmas tree or what we get. The older you get, the less you actually get presents for yourself because you've bought yourself something already this weekend. But when we start thinking about actually what's really important, the questions that are fundamental for us to who believe in Jesus is this. Is Jesus really coming again? Is he really going to return? The longer you've been a Christian sometimes, the less you believe that's going to happen. You start to doubt. You start to wonder, is it true? Is he really going to come back? What does that even mean? The second thing that we ask is, will it really be that good? See, if you really believe that Jesus will return and you really believe that his return is the greatest thing ever, it would fundamentally shift your perspective of things here and now, the day-to-day, of your life and the circumstances that you're in, because you would always have this greater hope of something bigger and something better. And if you know that to be true, that affects very greatly the strength that you have to persevere with the hardship that you're going through at the moment. Advent, and it's a tradition that you might know for growing up in this country, is the few weeks, 4 weeks before Christmas. And it's that time when you start in this country, I think, reading verses and remembering Christmas, and you go through some of the scriptures. But part of Advent is also saying, okay, that was when they were knowing that Jesus was coming the first time, when he was being born into this world. But for us, Advent is also the thing of remembering Jesus is coming again. Now, he resurrected from the cross, and he's alive today, and he's returning again. And that means a very real thing for us. The passage that we're going to look at today comes from Isaiah, Isaiah chapter 2. Let me read this out to you. It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be lifted up above the hills, and the nations shall flow to it, and many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways and that we may walk in his path. Now, if we first read this out, actually, reading Isaiah, reading these prophets seems a little bit strange. One, because normally we don't go to very many mountains anymore. Second is the symbol of a mountain doesn't mean the same as what it meant back then. For us to understand mountains, it's actually saying mountains is where they used to believe that that's where the gods lived. So the taller the mountain, the bigger the god, right? You know Mount Olympus, you know Zeus, all these things. They lived on the mountains. What this verse is saying in Isaiah is actually God's mountain will be taller and clearer and more obvious than any other mountain. That is what's to come. There's going to be a point in time in the future when you suddenly, everybody knows, actually, God is above any other god. Any other thing that you would want to worship in this life does not compare. It's not even close. I love it because it actually says, the house of the Lord, the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be lifted up above the hills. It's actually a biggest mountain, and then it seems like it's exalted even more. In other words, there is no comparison. That there will be a point in the future where everybody knows that actually God is the true God. Jesus Christ is above everything else. And if you'd say that now, I'd say, oh, that's really, but it's a little bit unbelievable. I mean, we can't agree on anything. Like, this world can't agree, you know, even on climate change stuff. There's no consensus. How can anyone get to the point where they, like, really believe or really understand? But the reality is people will know clearly. They will know without a doubt that this is it, the mountain of the Lord. The second thing that we see, aside from that, actually, that people will know very clearly, is that people will be drawn to worship. So in that passage actually says, and the mountain shall be established to the highest mountain, shall be lifted up above the hills, and all the nations shall flow to it, and many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, that we may walk in his paths. You know what's amazing about that? These people are going voluntarily. They're not being coerced. They're not being tricked. This is not like some dictator god showing up and saying, I'm the biggest god of all. All of you must come to me. This is not Apocalypse from X-Men sort of thing. This is God in his glory, in his majesty, and people and all the nations flow to it. They go to it. And that idea of flowing up a mountain is a sense of that's going the opposite direction to everything else, but people are flowing to God. And they're saying to one another, come, let us go to see him and meet him. That's what's going to happen. That is a guarantee. That is the truth of what's going to happen. Now, you say, well, but how do you know that for sure, that that's going to happen? Isn't that the challenge with doubt? Is that you don't really know, right? Just because it's written in the Bible, does that mean it's really going to happen? Because I don't want to believe that. I can't imagine the world ever getting to that point. The thing about this prophecy in Isaiah, it is both for the future and is also what is happening now. If you have ever met someone who really knows and loves the Lord, who had a turning point in their life. They used to live a certain way. They used to deny God. Then at some point in their life, the miraculous happens. They suddenly say, actually, God is the true God. You know what? I didn't believe in God growing up. Or I used to believe in this God. But then I discovered, God showed me that he was greater than all of these things. And I turned to him, and now I want to go to him, and I love him, and I want to head in his direction. I want to walk in his way. You begin to understand that what he's talking about there is already happening, because that is the body of Christ. That is the church. That's us. We are those people who are like, actually, it is amazing to be with God. We are supposed to be that flow of nations that is already heading towards the mountain of the Lord. And is saying, actually, why would there be anything different? That's the first thing. That's where we are now. But the other promise is, you also know, if you've come and met the Lord, if you know and he's spoken to your life and you're like, actually, God, you are the greatest ever. You also understand, if anyone knows you, God, if they truly know you, they couldn't turn away. You know, God, your grace and your love, your forgiveness, the worth that you give us even though we don't need it, your sacrifice, all the things that resonate deep in our heart, they're all found in you because you are the source of them. You are the light of them. You are the hope of them. And so this prayer and this thought of Advent begins this greater yearning for us to start saying, God, yes, actually, I really yearn for us to get to that point. For my friends, for my family, for my brothers and sisters, for us in the church, just to have this love of just walking towards you, just heading towards this mountain of your glory, of your majesty, walking as your children of light. Now that kind of thinking, that kind of mindset shifts the way that we live in this world today, because we're so caught up. Isn't life really difficult? If you're working, and the frustrating thing about working, and also the great thing about working, is you find that you're thinking about work all the time. And when you're at work, you're thinking about work because you're doing work. And then when you finish work, you're thinking about work because you're thinking about the work that you need to do that you haven't done. Or you're thinking about what's happened at work that day. Or the friends or the colleagues that you might have upset or irritated. And you're thinking about all these things, and it seems so consuming. And then you get home, and if you're family, you're just trying to make things get through life with your family, trying to figure out what to do with your kids, trying to figure out how to pay bills. And these things just become so everywhere, isn't it? If you're in university, it feels like, it's not just the studies that's the problem, isn't it? It's the uncertainty of what you're going to do when you finish your studies, or if you're even going to get to the end, or if there'll be any jobs there for you. And all this stuff just whirlwinds around you that you never feel like you're moving. You're being shuffled along with the waves of life, but you're not really going anywhere. This passage, when it says, come, let us go to the mountain of the Lord. Let's hear from him and his law. You begin to understand, the great thing about a mountain in the distance is you can see it. You can head in that direction. You know that that's it. That's my hope, God. And even though I feel like I'm tired of walking, I want to still head in that direction. That is my North Star. You are where I want to be at, where I want to get to. We all have these kind of goals and targets in life, don't we? I remember watching the Facebook movie, Social Network, and they were talking to Mark Zuckerberg, and he's like, you know, what's really cool is $1 million. And the guy says to him, no, what's cool is $1 billion. And they started realizing, we can aim to make $1 billion. How ridiculous is that? And that became his goal. So his first goal was $1 million, and his second goal was $1 billion. And now he's got so much money, he's not sure what he's, so now I want to do this foundation. And they're trying to give money away, but also try to make money, because they're looking for what their goal in life can be and head from target to target. And that's good, because we need those kind of goals sometimes. But actually what we need is an overarching goal to say, actually, what is my life's purpose? Where am I really going with this? Because at some point, your job will end or change. At some point, your kids will grow up or leave. At some point, you will get old. Your body cannot function the same way it used to. And in all those circumstances, if you do not know where that mountain is, If you have lost sight of that mountain, you will tumble into despair. You'll suddenly be really lost. You'll be frustrated. You'll be angry. And that's what happens, isn't it? You're angry at your job. You're angry at your spouse. You're angry at your future. You're angry at your parents because we don't know what we're looking at. One of the amazing things is even just that song, Ascension. Let's start that journey. Just saying, you know, God, you. I just want to keep going towards you. Because the amazing thing about God is he is not just in the distance, but he is with you along the way to teach you and guide you and shape you and be part of that thing that said, yeah, the Spirit is with you. Let it teach you. Let the laws of God be written on your heart so that you understand what it means to walk in that way. So as you journey, you are shaped and changed. And as you are put in different circumstances in your work, God is using that to challenge you, to help you to grow, so that you move in that direction. You're like, actually, God, I love you more and more. This week, I love you more than I did last week. This year, I love you more than last year. This year, I know you more than last year. That's what this idea of being people, being drawn to worship. We ourselves are those people who are saying, God, let us drawn to worshiping you. As individuals, as family members, to really love you more. It becomes this filter so that you start looking even at your workplace a little bit differently. We are all called in our workplace to do it well. And you guys, some of you guys are really great at your jobs. And that is fantastic. That is awesome. But you're also saying, on the way to work, on the way back, God, what are you showing me today? And he's coming back, God, what have you taught me today? Let me just release all that to you. Let me release those burdens and the pressures to you and prepare myself for what you're teaching me next. This thing which they say in verse 5, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, that maybe we may walk in his paths. There's two parts to that. The first is actually that people will be drawn to the truth. Like I said last week, the Oxford Dictionary Word of the Year this year is post-truth. We seem to be moved into a society that doesn't even know what truth is anymore. What's amazing about that verse before is people are saying, as they are deciding to go to the Lord, come, let's go to the Lord so that he may teach us his ways so that we may walk in his path. There's going to get to a point in time where people are like, actually, let's go because God, he knows the truth. He knows the way. He knows what's right. I want to go in that direction. I want that in my life. If there's something that this society needs right now, really, are people who are drawn to the truth. Not the kind of people who are always fighting against one another or complaining or saying that you're wrong, I'm right. But people who are really drawn to what is true, who is not interested in lies or deceit, who doesn't care about the gossip or the politics in the workplace, who understand that that is the society that we live in, but that is not who we are. We are people of the truth. Lies don't become us. And it starts with this hunger to say, actually, God, I want you to teach me what it means to be a person of truth. Truth in my character, truth in my attitude, truth in my life. See, that's what's to come. In the future, we are looking at, actually, there will be a time when actually the world will know. And you start thinking, actually, that is a beautiful, beautiful thing, isn't it? This promise of Christ where actually people are not fighting or warring against each other, but they are seeking God more and more, his truth. And it's not something done out of judgment or out of fear, but out of love, out of this desire. If that's the kind of hope that we have to look for, you start saying, yeah, that is really what the world needs. This broken, broken world, that is really what it needs. And you start saying, yeah, and I want to be part of that. I want to be part of what's to come. Looking a little bit further along in this passage, you'll start thinking about whether it's worth it. Let me read out. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations and shall decide disputes for many peoples. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. And that's, I mean, that's a very common passage that you hear read out, this idea of, you know, this kind of eternal peace, that people are not going to be making swords anymore. But one of the first things I want to point out about that is actually we'll know and see justice. Like true justice. Not just the court of law justice. Not just I sentence you to 5 years, or I sentence you to rehabilitation, or I sentence you to 10 years, but you can have parole in two. Those are human judgments, and that's important because without justice in the world, it'd be a very messy place. But when we talk about God's justice, what is God's justice? If you understand God to be sovereign king above everything else, but actually this sovereign king, he is full of love, but he is also full of truth. He cannot let lies come before him. Like that, you can't be a God of truth and accept lies. You start saying, okay, this is God. When he looks in my eyes, when he looks in my life, he sees and knows everything. And we're not just talking about your bad thoughts. We're talking about the actions that you have actually done to people. Whether it's a bad motive or unintentional motive, they have real repercussions. And when you start looking into the eyes of a God who is perfect and is holy and is all-powerful, you start realizing, I don't have a leg to stand on. I can't make any excuses. I can't make any complaints because this is God himself. If you've ever seen someone who is so truthful, so honest, when you go to them and you want to lie to them and they look you in the eyes and they just... They didn't have to ask, are you lying to me? You would already break down and say, yes, I am, because I have nothing to stand on when I come before you. That's what it's like to stand before God. He is so powerful, so genuine. None of us have any right to actually stand before him. And his justice is there because he can say, well, you are a liar. You are selfish. You are greedy. Should I let you stay with me? Should I let a lying, cheating person like you come into my presence, into my kingdom? If I'm building a holy society, well, I'm going to let in all the murderers and thieves, and I'm also going to let in you. You who I know wants to hide things in your heart. See, we all want the mercy of God, but we're scared of his justice. We want justice, God's justice, to go on the people that we think have done wrong, but we're scared to let God's justice cut into our own hearts. But what's important is for us to stop and say, actually, God, let your justice be known in my life. I submit to that. Because it's only when you do that that you can understand what mercy is. Mercy only makes sense when you understand the justice that you should receive, what is true and what is right. That actually God should kick us out of his kingdom, that we should have no right to stand before him. And at that point, you understand why Jesus is so beautiful. Because instead of justice, God says, you are guilty. You don't deserve to be here. But I'm going to put all that blame on Jesus instead. And he takes your place so that you can come in and be with me. And then you begin to understand, wow, that's what it means to actually, that's why we worship. That's why we love God, because he took our place. We don't have any right. Not just that, God then says, and I take all that sin that's in your life, all the wrong, all that attitude, and I put it onto Jesus. And instead, now that you're clean, I give you my own spirit so that you understand what it means to walk right. So that in this life today, when you are doing something that God doesn't think is a good idea, he convicts your heart and you just have to obey it. You just have to say, okay, yeah, that's not a right thing to do. I will change. I'm stopping that now. I walk with you. That is the life and the freedom that God gives us through Jesus. This passage that's talking about this justice that's to come, God judging the nations, it starts with saying God will judge us. And we'll see and know what that looks like. But because of Jesus, we'll also know forgiveness. And we'll know freedom. And we'll know mercy and grace and love. And in this, you suddenly have a perfect picture of why God is perfect in his justice and his righteousness, but also in his grace and love. That no other gods offer this deal, even though if they were a true God, that's what they should offer, because that's the only way it works. And that's why Jesus is so perfect. But the second thing is we start realizing God is also coming to judge this world, this whole world, all of history. And that guilt of either something we've done by our own actions or by omission still rests there. But God is going to bring that to a close. He's going to bring that part of the story to an end. And not just what we seek and know, Joseph, but we'll seek and know, we'll know peace, know and see peace. True peace. Not just no more wars because a peace treaty was signed. I love that verse because it actually says, nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. People are not going to know what war is. They're not going to understand. It's going to be a foreign concept to them. Like, isn't that worth knowing? Like, people are not going to learn hate or anger or violence. They're not going to learn abuse. They're not going to put themselves above another person. You know, this is what we really desire, and the world is trying to get there but doesn't know how to do it because they can't do it without God. It means you don't have racism or sexism anymore because not one group is putting themselves above another. There's not that prejudice or bias. We don't get being made fun of for the direction of our eyes or the color of our skin anymore. There is this actual peace because God is at the center of it, and people are like, why would I ever have a problem with you? Because of God's forgiveness and love in my life? We are brother and sister. And the world's trying to get there. The world is really trying their hearts to get there by being PC, by trying to say, oh, don't say that because it's racist. But that masks what someone says on the outside doesn't always reflect what's going on in the inside. And only God is the one who can heal and transform hearts. Looking forward to the day saying, actually, this is what real peace is like with one another, but also peace in our own hearts to know that we are no longer striving for our own security, for recognition. We don't have that shame that we had from growing up or situations, but you suddenly have that real peace in your life. And finally, we'll know and see transformation, real changes. That part about they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Those are two things. One are weapons of destruction or of violence and war. Plowshares, it actually means that you get to this point, instead of having a sword, you're doing something that reaps a harvest, that you work together to build something. And that's something really exciting, really amazing if you think about it. This idea of actually God's perfect kingdom, that we are working together for something good that produces a harvest. You have all the joy of working and none of the painful, like, awkward workplace people problems. Only the joy of bearing the fruit and working together for this project and bring it to life. The second thing is there are spears into pruning hooks. Spears which are involved to death, either killing an animal or killing one another. Pruning is actually bringing the fruit in, bringing the goodness in, bringing that life in. That's that transformation where we see actually what was used for death can now be used for life. That's what it's worth. You understand? That's why it's worth waiting for. That's why it's worth living as a Christian and saying, God, I continue to persevere with you even though it's a hard time, because I look forward to that day when that peace just encompasses so much, where your truth is just across this whole world. Now, that's the eternal, longer perspective. But in the short term, we're still saying the same thing. God, even though it's hard for me right now, I still look forward to the peace that you will give me in your life. God, I want to turn away from being someone who is fighting all the time against these people or violence, and I want to turn it into a time where actually there is harvest, that there is fruit, that there is life that comes from it. One of the joys that I've had over the past 20 years of serving in churches is seeing lives that were once so angry or so full of bitterness become transformed, where actually now they are agents of grace and of love. It's the kind of things where you think, I could never imagine that happening, and yet now here they are serving God in a way that is unbelievable. And you start realizing that these promises for the future are also promises for the present that God is asking us to be involved with already. Life with Christ begins now. It means asking God each day, you know, okay, God, what do I need to do? We can learn his ways. Just like what all those people are going to the mountain, they're saying, God, teach us your ways. We want to learn them. We are also the people who bring Jesus' life to the world around them. We're the people also saying, hey, come with us. Come and learn what Jesus has to say. It is great stuff. And thirdly, we pray for his peace. Pray for his peace on this earth, because it is violent, it is angry, it is messed up. But already we start praying and saying, actually, God, you bring your peace into these people's lives, people that we care about, people that we don't care about. This passage actually ends by saying, oh, house of Jacob, come, let us walk in the light of the Lord. Come, let us walk in the light of the Lord. Isn't that just a beautiful phrase for us to think about as we head to Advent? It's just heading into Christmas. One another, it's like saying to each other, come, let's walk in the light of the Lord. Let's go in this direction. Last night, after our life group leaders meeting, I went home and was talking to my wife. I share a little bit of this. I was talking to my wife, and we were talking about our kids and raising kids and what a challenge it's been. And challenged by mean like our kids, it's not a challenge because our kids are bad. It's a challenge because we as parents are bad. We're not very good parents. We are short-tempered. We're impatient. We're, like our kids are really good, and yet we're still so impatient with them. And we're talking about this and just kind of lamenting how poor we are as Christians. Like we don't even, you know, we're not exuding the love of God with us all the time. And it's frustrating, it's hard. And we're just sharing and talking about and saying what do we need to change. And it is amazing because it was actually God just using that time to teach us that we need a lot of work. That there is so much in us that needs to change to understand what it means to come, let us walk in the light of the Lord. But what was great was there's a desire to say, okay, let's pray now. And God, you forgive us, and you help us, and you teach us. It's funny because what I loved about that was it wasn't a question of how we change or fix other people, but it was starting by saying, God, what do you need to change and fix in us? And it was the Spirit's conviction that led us to that point to say, actually, if we are going to that mountain, if we are heading in the direction of the mountain, the first thing I'm thinking about is, God, make me holy. Make me holier as I head towards that mountain. Number two, God, make me more gracious and less judgmental. Fill me with that compassion. And thirdly, God, it's just saying, God, let me have your courage and perseverance to keep walking, to not give up, but to press on in you. Shall we pray? Jesus, you are